Okay, we are on sheet 25. Steaming through Be'ezrat Hashem. We're going forward at a good pace. We need to pick it back up in the Second Temple period again. We've had a lot of conceptual classes about Machlokes and this and that. We need to just make sure we get a good understanding of how this process pans out. I've given you various different timelines. I've given you three now, okay? And I want you to look at them. Not now, but I want you to make sure that you are aware of what they do and what they don't do. Just to remind you, so you've got them in your file somewhere, you should have somewhere at least one copy of a timeline that looks like this. This is a very broad overview of the periods of Jewish history. You should have a timeline that looks a little bit like this, which is a much more detailed look and analysis of Jewish history. And you should have something that I gave you a couple of times ago that looks like this was in Hebrew. Please don't let the Hebrew put you off, obviously not. Where it deals with Jewish history very much from a biographical perspective and talks about all the people, the specific people in Jewish history. Between all of these, and many more which I will be giving you over the period of the next 5 months, Be'ezrat Hashem, I want you to really get a good feel for who lived where, so that when you're learning anything in the future, you understand a little bit of context. Oh yes, this is a Rishon, this is an Acharon, he was the Chavrusa of this one, and he has this Shita and that approach, etc., etc. Now, let us start with source number one. Do make an effort not to go if you don't have to. We have 43 minutes, so please see if you can really focus in. Maybe I'll lock the door and laugh evilly. Sorry, our local health and safety inspector.
We don't listen to the fire alarms anyway.
Okay, fine. So let's look at number one. Tanya. Rabbi Yose Omer. The title is Beit Sheni. Okay, the Second Temple. The Hatchalat HaGalut. The beginning of exile. And one of the things you're going to get loud and clear from this particular look at Jewish history is that the Second Temple was a period of Golas, not a period of Geula. Ah, there was a temple, there was a Beit HaMikdash, there were Kohanim, you know, the whole account that we read on Yom Kippur of the Kohen coming out and marry Kohen, etc. That was all the Second Temple, and yet on a certain level it was all Golas, which has some interesting things to say about life after that. Have a look at number one. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ru'i Haya Ezra, Shetinasin Torah Al Yadol Yisrael. First of all, Ezra. We talked a bit about Ezra from a perspective of legislation, rabbinic legislation. The Torah could have been given to Ezra. Ilmale kadma Moshe, had not Moshe come before. But for the fact that Moshe came before, Ezra could have been the person who collected the Torah. But Moshe, with Moshe it says, Moshe Allah El Elokim, Moshe went up to God. And with Ezra he says, V'hu Ezra Allah Mibabel. Allah, he came up, he made an aliyah. Moshe made an aliyah into Shemayim. Ezra made an aliyah to Eretz Yisrael with as many people as he could bring, which were not very many. Ma aliyah ha'oime kan Torah, just as one aliyah is an aliyah into Torah with Moshe, af aliyah ha'oime lahalan, similarly the other one is also Torah. But Moshe hu omen, then with Moshe it says, ve oisi tziva Hashem be'etahi lelamed etchem chukim u'mishbatim, I have a mitzvah from God to teach you all these new chukim mishbatim. With Ezra it says, ki Ezra heichin levavo lidrosh et Torah Hashem. And we've seen that word before, Lidrosh, the period of Drasha, Chochma, etc., etc., from Novi to Chochem, we've talked about it a lot. This is the period of Ezra. And similarly, we find that Ezra was one of the people who founded Torah. Number two, Shevitchila Kishinishkacha Torah Mishrael ala Ezra Mibadal Yasta. Ezra came up when the Jewish people Nishkacha. What's Shichacha? Now, forget. But in this context, I heard from one of my Rebbeim, Rav Meir Tribbetz, he brought loads of proofs, different sources to prove this, that Shichacha doesn't mean that the people necessarily forgot Torah.
Does that ever come
to meaning? Not really. Shichacha tends to mean to forget something, but it means that they changed the paradigm. Meaning, at different points in Jewish history, there was a different shift in paradigm from one system to another. Ezra was a shift from system A, if you like, to system B, and he was a crossover figure. He was a Novi and also a Chochem. Okay, number three, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shua ben Korcha, Malachi ze Ezra. Malachi is Ezra. They're the same person. Okay? And number four, I think we've seen before, that again, this idea of shift, Meshemetu Nevi'im Achronim, Chagai Zecharu Malachi. Once these last few Nevi'im died, Paskeruch HaKodesh Mishrael, like we said before, the Novi Nevu was over, the Apple Piken Hayu Mashmim Lehem Es Baskol. But they did have Baskol, they had a lower level Nevu'ah, etc., etc. And he gives an example, which we haven't seen before. Maisa. Shenichnasu Chacham el Arias Beit Guria b'Yericho. This was towards the middle of the Second Temple period. The Chachamim went together to the Aliyah. They used to meet a lot in attics. You know, maybe it's out of the way. And to this Beit Guria attic in Yericho. The Yatza Basko, and the Basko came out, v'Amralehen, and said to them, Yesh kan Adam b'Nechem, there is a person amongst you, Sheroi l'Ruch HaKodesh. He could be a Novi. You could have had Nevi'im. Ela she'ein doiro zakalakach. What does it mean, ein doiro zakalakach? The generation is not worthy of having Nevi'im. Not nu'ei Nehem. They all looked at who? Awkward moment for Hillel. At Hillel Azake. Ukashimes. And when he died, Amru Allah, they said about him, Ha'anav, Ha'chosid, Talmido shel Ezra. He's a Talmud of Ezra. Meaning, of course, Hillel was not a Talmud of Ezra. Physically, Ezra was right at the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash. Hillel was right at the end of the Beis HaMikdash. There's 400 years between them, but these were both people who were critical figures, people who changed the paradigm. This quote that I gave you in number 3 says, when Torah began to need a new system, Ezra came and gave it. The end of that Gemara is, and when again they needed a new system, Hillel came and gave it. And we talked about that as well. But have a look at these psukim in Nehemiah. Did you see these psukim?
Yeah.
Very interesting, about how the people were shifting. Yes. That's a good question. I don't know whether Hillel, he was, but Nevuah is not just a product of how intelligent you are. It's a product of many other things. We saw already certain aspects of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro that Hillel had the advantage on than Shammai. Maybe the Shammai wasn't there that day. I don't know. You know, I don't know who exactly was in the Aliyah of who was it again? Bar Guria or Beit Guria. So I'm not sure about your answer. The Psukim, I'm not going to read all the Psukim because I want to really look at Yaakov Kamenetsky in detail. But what impression did you get from these Psukim? When was this episode happening, first of all? Which day? No, Sukkot was at the end. What does it say at the beginning? They gathered all the people together. And look at Pasuk 2. Be'avi Ezra HaKohen Eta Torah Lifnei HaKal Be'ish Ve'adi Shav. Rosh, but this was not Hakka, this was Rosh Hashanah. The Kol Mevi Nishma, but Yom Echad LaChodesh HaShvi'i. Yom Echad LaChodesh HaShvi'i. Which day is that? The first day of the 7 months? Rosh Hashanah. So they're having this whole Rosh Hashanah Torah reading, and he's reading the Torah, and what are people doing?
Crying.
Why are they crying? Because they don't know Torah, they're being reintroduced to Torah. And he says to them, don't cry, this is not an opportunity to be sad. Get up, go and learn, keep mitzvahs. It was like a national revival of mitzvah focus, of Torah keeping, etc. I'll just bring your attention to one pasuk at the end, which is really interesting. He says to them, then I'll go and keep sukkahs. And if you look at what it says in Tet Zayin, look at Tet Zayin for a second at the end of number 5. The Yetzu Ha'am. Everything okay? Okay. Fine. So if she's not feeling well, she go. Vayetzu ha'am, the people went out. Vayaviu, and they brought all this vegetation. Vayasu lehem sukkot, they made sukkot. Ish al gago, each guy on his roof. Ubechatzrotehem, and in their chatzerot, in their yards. Ubechatzrot beit elokim, and in the beit hamikdash. Okay. Uberuchav shar hamayim, and in the gates of the Yerushalayim. Vayas kol akal hashavim min hashevi. And all the people who came back from Babel made sukkahs, the Yeshua sukkahs, and they dwelt in sukkahs. Ki loy asu mimei Yeshua ben Nun. Now, what does that mean? Ki loy asu mimei Yeshua ben Nun.
Wasn't in the days of Yeshua.
Loy asu. They haven't really kept these mitzvahs since Yeshua ben Nun. Now, how far before was Yeshua ben Nun? There was Golas Babel. Then there was the first Beis HaMikdash. And there was the whole period of the Shoftim. Yeshua ben Nun was not far off 900 years before this. So they didn't keep mitzvahs for 900 years. So that's an interesting question. Elsewhere it says, somewhere, they didn't do Korban Pesach since Yeshua ben Nun. What's going on here really is that the people are undergoing a massive internal revival. We saw during the first temple period, we didn't see because we didn't talk about it, there were many times during the first temple when the people really weren't that involved in mitzvahs at all. Think about during the time of King Manasseh, when he spent 40 years basically completely decimating the entire system. People weren't keeping anything much. Some people may have been, but most people weren't. And these people are feeling to themselves, this is the beginning of something new. This is the beginning of something very, very exciting. The question is, what was it the beginning of? Have a look over on page number 2. What were the things that started coming in here? And to a certain degree, we're kind of going back a little bit because we talked about this period in the second temple. But it's important that we look at this and not forget it before we move on. So I'm going to give out again the little piece of paper from sheet 14 of some of the drabonons that they kept then. But look at these few selections that I've given you. Six. Ezra tikkun ahem li Yisrael shiyu korim b'Torah b'sheni b'chamishi b'Shabbat mincha. What does that mean? Oh, so in other words, the idea of not going 3 days without reading Torah, this was a new thing that the people brought in then. Number seven, Anshei Knesset Gedolah Tiknu Lahem Yisrael Brochas, Tfilas, Kedushas, Havdalas. Okay, so the whole Nusach, the idea of Nusach, what's Nusach? Fixed set text of words came in during this period. All the brochas that we have, apart from benching, which is obviously Doraisa, maybe Birkat HaTorah. Because over time they established a basic format, meaning in Shmona Esrei, there's going to be 18 at that stage brochas, and the first one's going to be talking about this, and the second one's going to talk about this. The exact wording, whether it's Mi'arfa Kanfaza Aretz, you know, La'artseinu or not La'artseinu, so that's minhag to a certain large degree. But the idea of being there is a Shmona Esrei, and you can't just get up and daven whatever you like. I mean, you can, but you have to do it within a Shmona Esrei. That's all coming from the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Halachas of brochas that you know beforehand they did whatever they want whenever they want. So now there is a fixed system. Number eight, Me'er Ve'Eshrim Zekenim. Oh, now this is interesting. Me'er Ve'Eshrim Zekenim Ubehem Kama Nevi'im Tiknu Shmona Esrei Brochas Shmona Esrei Brochas Ala Seida. How many people were sitting on this original base din of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah? 120. So where does 120 come from? So if you look for a second in number 10, this is a new source you haven't seen. If you look in number 10, there's a very, very good book, little blue book published by Mossad HaRav Kook, called Yisod HaMishnah Va'arichata. The foundation of the Mishnah, which we'll be talking about more and more as time goes on, and it's what's Arichata in that sense, like Shulchan Aruch. It's layout, almost, in that sense. Look at what Rav Zalman Margolis says to you here. And this is something I never knew until I saw this. I suppose I never knew anything until I saw it. But this I was very interested by. Number 10. Lama eifa herchivu betkufas aliyat Ezra et hamispar. Why did they increase the number of people during aliyat Ezra? From 70 on a standard Sanhedrin to 120. So look at what he says. Hasibahi. The reason is this. Ya'an she'az achrei shnot hagalut. They've just gone through this galut. Hutzruchu lechonen. Okay. Michadash. They had to establish from new. Okay, hakarat hamosad hazeh, a recognition of this body, v'tur merkash kol machne chachme Yisrael, they had to gather together all of the chachomim to really kickstart this whole period. Levilti tet makum la'arer, not so that no one had the ability to complain. Oh, they're not my rabbis. In other words, they had to have this getting together of all of the different rabbis from all of the different sections of society. Lechein huchruchu ad lekabel kechavrei habeisdin gadol kol roshei gadol hador hahu. It's almost like a messianic thing. They had to get all the rabbis together, and 70 was just not enough. They had to do 120 so that everybody would say, "This is my Sanhedrin, not your Sanhedrin. It's our Sanhedrin." Aval kasha niftru achra came, when they begin to die out one after the other, loy hoisifu limnois biramom. They didn't add to the number. Meaning they gradually went down and down and down and down and down and down. Havu yamim shemispa chavrea hayumea. So after a while it was only 100. But achra came, after that shmona, shmoni mushmona, and then it was 88, whatever. But came paschu b'minyan, and they went down in minyan. So they went down to 70. Meaning, this minion of 120, this 120 based in, went down and down and down and down until they hit 70, and then they stuck at 70, and then they appointed new people. So again, this was part of the whole process of the changes that needed to be made at the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, to really kickstart the system properly. I want you to look with me for a second at Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Have a look at Rav Yaakov in page number 4.
They had Nevi'im who were helping them, guiding them through
at the beginning. That first process was Nevi'im guided of 120, but they made a few other important changes as well, which we're going to see right now, which were there to instill on them the idea that this wasn't the real Geula. Yes.
So if the Sanhedrin became this group of 120 after all the exiles came in and
yes.
Made this
Actually, it wasn't all the exiles, it was a small group of people. Right. There were millions of people out there, and a few tens of thousands came in.
So I mean, so they have these 120 people, but why are they starting to seek an individual prayer while they're rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash?
Because they had to be mitaken not just the structural issues. And the Beit HaMikdash was a small thing at the beginning. It was a very small construction. It says the people that were alive that remembered the first Beit HaMikdash cried. They cried when they saw the second one because it was, wasn't anything like the Herodian thing we imagine. When we go walking around Yerushalayim, we see the very end of the Second Temple period. The beginning was a very modest structure. More of a priority for them, if you like, was the idea of, you know, like the Pirkei Avos, it says, let's look at number 9 for a second. What did the Anshei Knesset Gedola say? They said 3 things. What were the 3 things? The 3 things that the Anshei Knesset Gedola were particularly for. Havu Matunim Bedin, be very careful in your analysis. Hemidu Talmidim Harbi, make many Talmidim, and Asu Siag LaTorah, and make offense for the Torah. Now, some people say that these 3 things correspond to the 3 basic columns of Torah Shebaal Peh that really kick-started. Remember? Okay? So, some people say that these 3 statements in Pirkei Avos about the Anshei Knesset Gedola, be very careful in your analysis, make sure you have lots and lots of students, and make fences for the Torah. So which fits into which column? It's pretty obvious, no? Fences is this one, okay. This is make fences to the Torah. Make sure you have lots of Talmidim to carry on the Masorah is 1 and 2. This is the Talmidim. And be very careful in your analysis of the Torah is 3. It fits like a glove. Meaning, they are the people who are doing this, therefore not just buildings, but they're producing a whole structure to Torah.
Shemona Esrei and Tefillah during the time of the Second Temple. Like, people were still having an prayer when they could still bring Korbanos.
100%. It's a mistake to think, by the way. A lot of people say this, but it's totally incorrect that there was that Korbanos were replaced by Tefillah. It's not correct. They had Tefillah, the sign of the second Beit HaMikdash. They used, in fact, the Gemara talk about how they used to bring the Korban and then go down to the shuls of Dan and Shacharit or whatever it was. They had Korbanos and Tefillah side by side for hundreds of years. And then Korbanos went away and all that was left was Tefillah. But this idea that Korbanos were replaced by Tefillah is not really correct at all. Now, what does Rav Yaakov say? Did who go around to reading Rav Yaakov? Oh, big crowd. Okay, so you guys didn't really see what he had to say, right? So have a look with me. Was it because I wasn't there that you were all misbehaving? Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's son. Okay? Yes. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky in Philadelphia, okay, and Rav Nosson Kamenetsky in Yerushalayim are 2 of the sons of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. I brought you a picture of Yaakov here on the last page. He's quite famous, right? You've seen him before. You know who he is. A very important figure in American Jewry. I want you to read some of the interesting things here with me. I'm going to pick out a couple of these issues, but I want you to follow with me because there's a lot of important stuff to learn here. Okay, everyone got it, guys? You folks have all got it? Yes? Okay, let's go. Pick it up, please, in the paragraph that goes on Yud Bet on the in the Chumash. Kasava Ramban. You got it? Kasava Ramban. So I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to pick out a few things. So what does the Ramban say? Well, Kfaris Ki Rabbeinu. Zeha Einian, the Amru, Shemotachadashim, the names of the months. The names of the months are in which language? They're Persian. Alu Imanu, okay, they came up with those, Mibavel from Babel. Kimitchila loy hayolahem Shemotachetzleinu, Avaka Asher Eilenu Mibavel. What were the months called in the Torah? What are the months called? First month, second month, third month, etc. What are the dates called? Exactly, the days have no names, the months have no names. When we came back from Babel, all of a sudden the months had names. Okay, Chazaron likroa chadashim shenikroim be'eretz Babel. Ahav ki kishem, hisham amadnu, umisham helinu. That we were there in Babel and we came back from Babel. Hashem, helinu Hashem yisparach, Hashem brought us back. Ki eli Hashem was Nisan, Iya, etc., etc. Shemot Parsiim, they're all Persian names. The loyim tzerak b'sifrei neviei Babel, etc. They only appear in the neviim that were in Babel. Chani?
Yes.
Thanks. And he says, not only that, but some of them are avodah zarah. Why do we give the names of the months of the year, the Jewish months of the year, names of avodah zarah?
Yeah,
Cultural. Now, come on, guys. Why would Judaism pick cultural names of Avodah Zarah for the months? For example, what are the months of the week in English? Where do they come from? They're all Avodah Zarah. They're all Avodah Zarah. They're either North European Avodah Zarah, like Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, which come from Woden, Thor, and Freya, or they're Roman Avodah Zarah, like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Actually, Tuesday is also in England is Viking, whereas in France it's called Tuesday is Mardi from Mars. Okay, and Wednesday is Mercredi from Mercury. From Mercury. No, Lundi is Monday. Lundi is Monday. Monday's from the moon. Yeah. In other words, all the days of the week are Avodah Zarah days in English. So in Hebrew, we didn't do that with the names of the week, but we did that with the names of the month. We chose Avodah Zarah names for the names of the month. And that's funny. Why was that? And look at the second thing he says towards the end, four lines up from the bottom. Ube'emes matzinu shebi'emei bai sheni haita safa hamudu beres b'Yisrael lashon Aramaic. What language did we speak in the second temple? Aramaic. What happens to Hebrew? Rak divrei Torah kasu b'lashon HaKodesh. Only lashon HaKodesh was only used for divrei Torah. Why did we pick a foreign, non-Jewish language like Aramaic to speak in the time of the second temple? And furthermore, he says that there were many, many things missing at the time of the second temple. What was missing at the time of the temple, second temple, from the Beis HaMikdash? What was missing? The Aron Kodesh, the Urim and the Tumim. Did we know where the Aron Kodesh was, says Rav Yaakov? Yes, we did. And he brings a Mishnah in Shkolim. A Mishnah in Shkolim. He says, no, a Mishnah is this, or the Vatican was afterwards. During the second temple period, the Mishnah in Shkolim brings an account of one of the Kohanim who tripped over the entrance to the trap door, to the corridor, which went down to the place where they hid the Aron Kodesh. And he, before he got a chance to explain to anyone where this was exactly, says he died. Meaning, there were people that knew this. So why didn't they get it out and use it? Why didn't they say, well, let's get the Aron Kodesh and put it in the Beis HaMikdash? They didn't do this. And there's a reason. So look in the third paragraph there. Nirashe Ole Bavel. You with me on page 4 of the sheet? Nirashe Ole Bavel. Shebanu es Bais HaShemi. They built a second temple. Yadu, but they knew. Ki loy zeha binyan asher yamud le'olamin. This was not the final redemption. This building would not last forever. Ve'en chazaroson la'aretz Yisrael b'tkufa zo ha'geula shleima. This was not geula shleima. This was an in between. Dasam haise ki binyan habayis v'tzkuf hazod lo noad ele lahachin et ha'am v'tzkuf ha'agadolut ha'arucha. The purpose of this second temple period, and this is a whole new way of looking at the second temple, was simply to prepare them in a lower level goddess for what was going to come to them soon in this case being 400 years, in a much deeper goddess. Meaning, think of what the Jewish people looked like after 70 years in Babel. Well, the reality was horrible. Meaning, you can't always make life, you know, roses and...
But you were saying with the Beis HaMikdash being amazing, and it was like a good time. I know it wasn't a good time.
But maybe that's ever simplistic. Maybe to a certain degree, what we had was good, but we weren't to think for a second, just because it's good, it doesn't mean it's the best. And just because we are in a state of semi-Ga'ula, we shouldn't deny that we're still in a state of Galut.
Why couldn't we just be in Galut?
Because, look what happened after 70 years in Babel. The Jewish people came back after 70 years. They could hardly speak Hebrew. They were intermarried to non-Jewish women. They'd lost most of their connection to Judaism and Torah. You know, they're saying, oh, we've never sat in the sukkah before. What is this? Like, where have you guys been? The answer is, 70 years nearly wiped them out. So they said, this is not going to happen. We're going to have to go into Golas for thousands of years. Until we can set up a system that will protect us in Galut, we can't go. And therefore, the Second Temple period, with all its halachic structure, with its nusach hatfilah, with its minyan and kaddish and all of these things, this gave structure so that when we eventually left, we would live in a society which could preserve itself through the Galut. And it's incredible how over 2,000 years it's done. Obviously, we've lost a load of people along the way, but the system has been very well preserved even in Galut. But Rabbi Yaakov is making a good point, which is nogea for today, without making any kind of, certainly not making a political point, but to something of a hashgraphic point, that are we to view the situation that we're in now, which is a semi-redemption period, and it's impossible to say that nothing's changed for the last 100 years, that we're living in a land with 6 million Jewish people here, and a revival of Jewish Torah, and learning, and seminaries, and yeshivas, etc. Are we to turn around and say, oh, this is Geula, Baruch Hashem, we're in Geula, or are we to say, no, this is some other process which is a semi-Geula, but not a full Geula, and what does it mean? Let's not get
too overpowered by what we see around us. And he said they had to build into the Second Temple period these things. Aramaic, not Hebrew. Avodah Zorah month names, not Hebrew. Things missing from the Beis HaMikdash to educate the people, this is not the real deal. It's important, but it's not the real deal. Yes?
You look in like Zechariah and like all the different Nevi'im of that time period, of the beginning of the Second Temple time period, and they're all they talk about is God sanctioning the rebuilding of the temple, and
okay.
God believing in this. So how can you argue that it was not a real Geula if it was sanctioned by God?
No, but God is sanctioning a semi-Geula. Why does God have to sanction a real Geula? God is an all or nothing?
It wasn't, but, no, but I'm saying like, it wasn't like the rabbis got together and said that we need to fix the Jewish people. God said you are worthy to go back.
Right, you are worthy to go back, but Zerubbabel, who went back with them, did not become the new leader of the Jewish people. Zerubbabel, who was from Yehuda, okay, he did not, it didn't become what it could have become. Maybe from God's perspective, it had the potential to be a real Geula. But most of the people stayed in, I don't know, I pointed to you because we always talk about it. Most of the people stayed in, you'll be the last one to stay. Most of the people stayed in Babel and didn't come. Why? Because why would you make Aliyah? It's so nice over here in Babel. We're going to give up our jobs, going to give up our lives for what? For like a place which is full of bandits and people are trying to kill you. Why are you going to move there? So that was one thing. The Chashmonaim, when they managed to get somewhere in terms of independence, they took the power for themselves and they, instead of giving it to Shevet Yehuda. Like, lots of things failed along the way. So you're telling me God sanctioned it? Yes, maybe God wanted it to potentially be the beginning of something big, but it wasn't. And therefore, the Chachamim of the generation realized that the people had to realize, to know that, and understand that. Look at these footnotes, because there's some fascinating footnotes. Have a look in number 17 for a second. I want you to see this. Ubechidushav. It's saying, on his Chidushim, because this Eves Yaakov was put together by the Talmidim of Rabbi Yaakov. He said, in his Chidushim, on Pirkei Avos, Bia Rabbeinu, Shechelik Mehasiba, Shehechziram, Hashem Yisbarach, L'Eretz Yisrael, part of the reason that God took them back to Eretz Yisrael at that time, so that they could put together Torah Shebal Peh, they could rebuild Torah. Ki yada ha'ashkocha, because ha'ashkocha knew shebishvil lahachzik ma'amad begalut shuv e'ef sheshitiyah ha'Torah Shebal Peh nechlasam ha'pratim shel chachmei ha'Torah nechlasam ha'pratik. Sorry, it couldn't any more be that the Torah Shebal Peh was a private thing in the hands of private chachamim. Elohim chrechet liyot nechlasam shel kol Yisrael. It had to be the nachala of all the Jewish people. He said. Ulechem gam amdu az v'gazru al petach. What does it say? I can't read it. Al pita mushamnam. Okay, they made these different gezeiras to develop Torah Shebal Peh. Hakol kedei lehitzrachek min hagoyim, to keep, just like I said before, to make these separations from the non-Jews. Kedei shelo yishdaku b'toicham b'meshach yimei hagalut. Where was the thing about Eretz Yisrael? Yeah, have a look in the next line. Va'ayim sham shebir hadvarim heitav. He explains this well. Oid hosif rabbeinu, and he explains this well there, and you have to understand this was coming from Rabbi Yaakov, who was the leader of the Haredi community in America. The kama hizdamnu yotz. He told us many times, Shekach aleinu, the same is happening to us, Lahavin, we have to understand, Gam et hakamat medinat Yisrael, b'yameinu. I can't think of any Haredi leader that would stand up and say this clearly in this way today. But we have to appreciate that the establishment of the state of Israel, Shela'acha churban hagodl, after the great destruction, v'hayyush, and the desperation, Shenechaz v'kerev she'erit ha'pleita, which was really surrounding the survivors from the Holocaust, v'chein la'or matzavam hanuash, and because of their dejected and rejected and depressed situation, v'ha'avud, and lost and just completely destroyed, shel Yadut Rusia, of Russian Jewry, which over the period from the 1920s to the 1960s was just decimated completely, shivei v'kodesh baruchu et hakamat ha'medina, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged the establishment of the state, kedei lechazek et hazehut hayehudit, to reignite Jewish identity. Jewish identity. Okay. Ulekayim et hakesher shebein yahadut hagola v'klal Yisrael. Very amazing things. Meaning, he's saying that Medinat Yisrael today is not Geula, He's not going to be one that stands up and says, Reshit Smichad Gul Atenu, although that phrase itself is open to so many interpretations. The beginning of the redemption. There's not many. It is the redemption. He says it is a stage which is not full Geula, but is not full Galut. It's there to achieve a certain purpose which is in between them. Meaning, he says, he understands the state of Israel is critical in the hashkocha of the Jewish people to reignite the Jews' confidence, their identity, their belief in themselves.
But if this part of the process of Kibbutz Galiot is essential to Geula.
He's not mentioning Geula. He doesn't say anything about Kibbutz Galiot either. He says that what's happening today is we need for the Jewish people. He doesn't say whether this is the beginning of a process of Geula that's going to be now imminent within the next 10, 100, 300 years. He says this is what the Jewish people need right here, right now. Maybe it's Mashiach. Maybe nothing to do with Mashiach. But the Jewish people need it. Hashkocha prophet that we have. No? That's the thing. It doesn't have to be, he says. It doesn't have to be. Just like the second temple has to be Geula, no, it doesn't have to be. It could be something else. On the contrary, he's saying Kibbutz Galiot is absolutely critical. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making it happen so the Jewish people can create what we have today in Medinat Yisrael, which the Jewish people need. Where are you going to get revival of the Jewish people? From America? From Russia? Now the truth is, there was a big revival in America during and after the time of Yaakov. But to reignite the Jewish people, that's a good question. Very much so. But out of the box.
You can't deny that Kibbutz Galiot is a forerunner.
Arabian American. He was not as good as his
child. That's in the Nevi'im. You can't say, oh, like Kibbutz Galiot, like I'm going to turn a blind eye to that and just say it's strength.
Again, I think what he's doing here is not turning a blind eye at all. He's saying something very special is happening, and we see the Hashkocha is, it's in order to save the Jewish people.
But
now,
I feel like it's like downplaying it just to say it's...
Again, what is the context of this statement? And I'm not saying this is necessarily my personal opinion. That's irrelevant what my personal opinion is. But he's saying this in the context of think about the second Beis HaMikdash. Think about periods in Jewish history which could mistakenly be easily interpreted in this way, but actually they're more subtle. There's more sophistication than that. And that's what he's saying there. Okay, I'm just opening your minds to other ways of looking at things. And Rav Yaakov is a fascinating way of looking at things. And you can read the rest on your own, because I haven't got time for that now. The other two things I want to mention to you are as follows. First of all, number 12, which was a very interesting source about the Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. I hope you saw that. It's a famous midrash, which is brought in the Gemara in Yuma, where he goes out in the big day Kohen Gadol and he greets Alexander the Great, which is again the kind of Jewish bonding with the Greek idea. Of course, this became a war eventually with Greece and Panic Time. We'll talk more about Athens and Greece. But this is another thing that is going on during the Second Temple period. But you need to understand that the Second Temple period was a very complex period. From a Teresh Rabbah Peh perspective, from a Jewish identity perspective, there was lots of things all happening at the same time. But yes, there's a Beis HaMikdash, and yes, there's new Torah, but there's a preparation for Golus, and there's an embracing of the Greeks on a certain level, or at least a connection with the Greeks. There's a lot of different preparatory acts going on in order to pave the way for what is coming later. And, okay, they at the time may not have seen that in exactly this way because they were living through it, just like we don't see what we're living through. It's very hard for us to interpret what's going on today. You need a lot of retrospective hindsight to begin to even suggest that this is this and this is that and this is this. You know, people, it really drives you nuts that people stand up the day after or the week after some event that happens, whether it's a bad event, usually a bad event, not a good event, and say, this is happening to us because of this and this and this. Why are you laughing?
This could be prevented by the braiding.
You have a position on this braiding? What's your position on this? Yeah, and I'm with you completely. And nobody understands the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world right when they're in the middle of it. Even looking back, the Gemara in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Ein biyadeinu, we have no way of understanding why tzaddikim suffer and why rishayim prosper. We don't have any understanding." And yet, all of a sudden, people stand up after the Biku in Hanov, after this one, after that one, and say, "Oh, I know why this is happening. This is happening because of X." Coincidentally, X is always their opinion. Meaning, God obviously passes like me. Because this is clearly happening because, in the current one, Jews are going on to Temple Mount. Well, maybe it's happening because you're stopping Jews going on to Temple Mount. How do you know? Isn't it funny that...
Have a channel with God?
As far as I can recall in the Chumash, the only person it says that he's Yodea Da'at Elyon, that he knows the understanding, understands the vision of God, is Bilam HaRosha.
Really?
He's the only one that makes a claim that he understands what God's thinking. You know? So
that nobody actually understands.
No. No.
Oh,
because I actually, do, funnily enough, have a channel. No, not really. But I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you, Freddie. I think there has to be a response. It's very important to have a response, and a response can be: we need to take this episode in order to strengthen this, or look at that, or Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, or whatever it is that we. That's very good. But you can't say this is why this is happening, or this is why that's happening. And you know something? What a very, very. A very good piece where there's in Boston, the Boston Rebbe who lives in Har Nof, he put up a piece about the Pigua, and he said some very, very good things on that. And he makes the point there, Freddie, that you're saying, is that we cannot say why this happened or why that happened. That we can't say. But we can use it as an opportunity to do this or to do that, to do this, to that. Okay? On a personal level for Tshuva, on a national level for unity, on a level where the people were affected to help them, where we can help them, that we can certainly do.
So, but, Why does Hashem do that? Like, why do we have that attack?
Okay. So the first thing I would start by saying is that the question is an understandable psychological, maybe even emotional response, but intellectually it makes no sense that you should start saying, I wish to understand in my human limitation, the vastness of a being that I claim is beyond time, infinite, etc. That there are two, it's an intellectual steerer. It doesn't work. It's like giving you a 5.5 million piece jigsaw puzzle and saying, picking up a little piece of blue and saying, what's this? I mean, what does that mean? I need to build up a picture, and I'm never going to build up a picture. Now, very often the question that comes like that is actually not coming from an intellectually, if you like, searching place. It's coming from a natural, emotional, psychological response. Why did this happen in my neighborhood? Okay? Now, the answer to that question is not because you're all wicked, or because other people in the world are wicked and you're suffering, which is what a lot of people seem to say. Chassid Shalom wants to say that, is we don't know why, but now it's happened, how do we respond? In other words, asking the question why is much less important than asking the question, now what? Now what? Now what's the appropriate reaction? Oh, yeah, sure. But I'm not saying that the big people necessarily said that. People say all sorts of things. You know, after the Holocaust, some people said, the Zionists said it's because you weren't Zionist. And the anti-Zionist says it's because you were Zionist. What's that?
That's the Sam Rabbi's paper by Yoel Moshe, that the reason why the Holocaust happened was because of the pioneers
of Israel. Okay, and Em Habanim Smecha, on the other hand, turns out and says it's because we didn't. And the people who were Zionists hold a paper upon his neck and say, look at this great book. And people who are not Zionists, you know, at the end of the day, none of them know. Okay? Because, but there has to be a response, and they both feel the response should be X, and they're both amazing, you know, Gedolim who have insight into the Jewish people. Now, before you finish, because I'm not letting this bypass us anymore, in the last 7 minutes.
Then how can you
say
that, like,
he was able to find it? Take this, you probably, sorry, 1 second, stop. Alright? Now, you probably have this in Sultan the 14th, but I'm giving you another one so you have something to look at. Okay? And I'm just going to run through some of the important changes that Vice Shani brought in. And then we're going to move. Hang on, there aren't any forever. Did I not make enough? I must have made enough. Oh yeah, here's some more. Ladies, so I can appetize you for your lunch. Oh, of course you can. Make sure the coffee's working now. Everyone got? Okay, guys, I brought you this in sheet 14, but we didn't get a chance to look at it. So have a look here at the various things, and these are all coming. First of all, look at the place that says early rabbinic legislation. Okay? The idea of creating legislation for the Jewish people starts very much at the very beginning. Moshe Rabbeinu Gaza Kama Gezeris for Tikkun Kama Takanos. Okay, the Kimos Heim La'Olam Alamim, and they are ongoing. And we see various interesting examples of that. Look at things which are attributed to early stages of Jewish development into the Second Temple period. Moshe Rabbeinu is connected with Sheva Brochas, 7 days of Avelis, the beginning of Brikas Hamazon, the mitzvah to learn the laws of that festival on the festival. These are all the Rabbonos. Everything on this page is Rabbonos.
Yeshua is connected with various different halachas of settling the land and how to use the land. David HaMelech is attributed with other parts of Brikas HaMazon. Yichud with a woman who is permitted, meaning Yichud is a Doraisa. But Yichud with a Pnuya, who is not a Nida, which is very rare these days, is technically Drabonon because he introduced it as a Siag. Shlomo HaMelech and Eruv and Yadayim, the idea of Netilas Yadayim for different things. Again, Drabonon. On a Doraisa level, there's no such thing as Netilas Yadayim. Either all Tame or all not, or all Tahor, and only Mikvah works, but on a rabbinic level, Yadayim. Ezra brought in all sorts of interesting things. Jewish courts on Mondays and Thursdays, we just saw. Torah reading on Shabbat, Mincha, we just saw. Washing laundry for Shabbos on Thursday, so that you would be prepared for Shabbos, and you'd have Erev Shabbos to get yourself in the correct mood for Shabbos, and not running around doing laundry, which took a whole day or more. Eating garlic on Friday night. That's not one... That's a thing. It's a thing. It is a mitzvah. It was really addressed at married couples in order to help them to fulfill all the other mitzvahs on Friday night that they needed to fulfill. I put that in the delicate way that I could. Here's an interesting one, which you may have come across. Okay? Shh. Not to daven or learn after having marital relations before going to the mikvah. Now that's one that didn't catch on. That's one that fell away. We saw before, it's a very interesting example of where we said that a drabonon, unless it was accepted by the Jewish people, didn't have tokef, didn't have force. Ezra created, this is an interesting whole account, Ezra created drabonon, a drabonon, that men, particularly, were not allowed to learn or daven after they've had marital relations until they go to the mikvah. The reason for that was in order to make the men be less insistent on their wives, to treat them in a way which, if you like, sees them more as sexual opportunities as opposed to husbands and wives. It was designed to kind of downgrade their attitude towards sexuality. And in fact, it didn't work at all. All it did is they just didn't daven or learn. Men, what can you do? Okay? So in the end it got scrapped, but it's actually still, according to mostly, it's still a minhag in some areas, in some societies, that they do still as a minhag go to the mikveh every morning before they daven shachris, but now it has a minhag rather than a drabonon. The Anshei Knesset Gedola, we talked about Brochas Amida Purim, okay, which is based in Sukkim, but it's still ultimately drabonon, Kiddush and Havdalah, and then all through the Zugos, Yosef ben Yoaz and Yosef ben Yochanan, the idea that glass is tameh, not just metal, the chus la'aretz is tameh. The minute you step foot, only Manchester. No, at the minute you step foot out of Eretz Yisrael, you're tameh drabonon. You're tameh drabonon. Now, so we're all tameh d'oraita, so we don't care anyway, because it doesn't affect us. But we do care on a certain ruchani level. Chus la'aretz is chus la'aretz. Okay? That's why they call it shmutz la'aretz. Okay? Because it's tameh drabonon. Chanukah, prosbul, which we're not going to talk about now. And after the Second Temple as well, just flip over the other side for a second. I'll just show you what I've got on the page there. I've made a list of different takonas, some of which are very interesting in different ways, and the kind of takonas that they made during the Second Temple period. You can look at them in your own time. We talked about some of them. We talked about that, no?
No.
That Ezra made a takana, for example, that they, or the Chazal made a takana, I'm not sure if it was Ezra, that in every place where there's a Jewish yeshiva, there should be some basic necessities, like a mikveh, and things like that, schools and all that kind of schools came a bit later. And the idea that women should have access to cosmetics if they want them. Is that relevant? Is that important? So Chazal said, yes, absolutely it is. Because people have got to feel, if they want to, in other words, there's no chiyuv to wear makeup, if you don't want to. But women who are married, specifically, have to feel that they're not in a place where they're not able to be, you know, attracted to their husbands, if that's what they want to be. There's no mitzvah to be a certain way. But you see the sensitivity that the Rabbanos even get into this area of, like, keeping shalom bayis, where that's what's necessary for shalom bayis. The one about the two-year-old, that you can't marry until your kid is two, we did talk about, right?
Yeah.
Because then it's protection to the child, and various others as well. But you can read them on all the duties of a husband for the wife, which are not the rights of the wife or husband. What's that? Yeah, so they made not just overnight, but they made a gezeira that liquids which are left uncovered cannot be drunk because there's a fear that snakes or something may have got into them. Today, I mentioned this, we don't do that because we don't have snakes. And it's part of...
What? If you knew this drink,
you'll have it.
You said that's not true.
If today, we do not have a problem with that. But there is a clear gezeira. Which bit's not true? That there was a problem or there's no problem?
Snakes can put their venom into liquid.
No, there is. Oh, I don't know whether how the scientific issues work, but Chazal were concerned that liquids left open might have stuff in them that's not good for you. Now, it's not an issue because that stuff doesn't go in there because we're not living in a place where it is. Okay, next time, Be'ezat Hashem, I'm going to talk about the missing years.